Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wisconsin versus Gypsy Blanchard.
Prosecutors charged Gypsy Blanchard and Nicholas Godejohn of Waukesha County with killing Dee Dee, then posting profane comments about the murder on Facebook.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. We are back in the saddle again for the rest of the sordid tale of Gypsy Rose Blanchard and her mother Dee Dee, who subjected the young girl to various unnecessary treatments due to what doctors believe was an undiagnosed case of Munchausen by proxy. And before we begin with the saga that is Gypsy Rose, I want to touch on the fact that this isn't a one-and-done type story. This has happened to other families over the course of decades, since Munchausen by proxy was first brought to light in 1977 by British pediatrician Roy Meadow. Since then, we have only scratched the surface on the diagnosis, but have only grown more fascinated by it. Dr. Gail Saltz, Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the New York Presbyterian Hospital Weill Cornell School of Medicine, she said in an interview with Bustle.com that she understands why people are so captivated by the syndrome and how it is portrayed in the media. It is one of the more curious mental illnesses because we don't really know what causes it, nor do we have very successful means of treating it. It is unusual, and it can cause terrible harm to those who are most vulnerable. She stated this, noting that it's especially difficult for people to understand why a mother would knowingly harm their child. And sadly, the Gypsy Rose case is not the first case that has grabbed the attention of media, and it won't be the last, because this is such a fascinating subject. I wanted to highlight a few other cases of suspected Munchausen by proxy, because I'm sure some of you probably want to do a deep dive as well. Rolling Stone covered the case of Mary Beth Tinning in a timeline from 1967 to 1985, in which her 9 children were suspected of being murdered at the hands of their mother. 8 of the 9 children died shortly after their births, and it is believed only one died of natural causes. Mary Beth would frequently bring these newborns to the ER for symptoms that feigned seizures or cardiac arrest, and they were treated as such. At one point, doctors even thought the children were dying because of sudden infant death syndrome. Friends and neighbors thought that there was certainly some sort of death gene in the family. But then, shocking those around her, even her adopted son died of what appeared to be SIDS. So that blew the death gene theory out of the water. Doctors and nurses began to voice their suspicions and look through hospital records of the deceased children. Mary Beth initially denied the accusations against her and was only indicted in 3 deaths. Eventually, she admitted to smothering her youngest child, though, and she was only convicted of that one crime due to a lack of clear evidence of crimes committed against the older siblings. Mary Beth was released in 2018 after serving 31 years of a life sentence. Shockingly, she is still married to husband Joseph, who stuck by her side. In another case similar to the Gypsy Rose story, decades ago in Florida, Kathy Bush was accused of intentionally making her daughter sick by giving her extra doses of medicine, perhaps intentionally infecting her in order to go to the ER for treatment. According to the Sun Centennial newspaper, by the time the girl was 8 years old, she had undergone 40 medical procedures, had more than 1,800 non-surgical treatments, and had spent nearly 700 days in the hospital. Her mother was charged with aggravated child abuse and sentenced to 5 years, though she served 8. Jennifer, however, claims that she was never abused. Leslie Wilfred's case is especially bizarre. She allegedly faked a pregnancy with twins and went so far as to also fake their deaths. She concocted a story and told family members that each child had taken one breath before passing away. She went so far as to have a funeral, cremating and burying her babies in teddy bear-shaped urns. When it was revealed that the twins had never existed, it was also brought to light that she had been making her other children incredibly ill for years. She pleaded guilty to several counts of child cruelty and was sentenced to 20 years in prison, to serve 8 years and remain on probation for the remainder of her sentence. She was also ordered to have no contact with her children during the 30 years of probation that followed her incarceration, according to FoxNews.com. And the last case I will briefly touch on is one involving blogger Lacey Spears, who was convicted in the death of her son Garnett after poisoning him with salt. That story is absolutely heartbreaking, so be warned if you decide to investigate on your own. But as you can gather from these few examples, there are unfortunately so many more instances of this presumed mental disorder leading to the demise and sometimes the deaths of innocent children. It's frustrating that it's so difficult for doctors to diagnose, though, and more often than not, it seems they arrive at the Munchausen by proxy probability too late for the young lives it affects. But back to the subject at hand. And this episode will make more sense if you go back and listen to part one of the Gypsy Rose series. And I said it in the last episode, the journey we are about to go on feels like a horror movie or a work of fiction. And trigger warning here once again, guys. This episode will deal with accounts of abuse, neglect, and other sensitive topics. So please take care while listening. When we signed off on the last episode, we had learned that one of Gypsy's doctors had become suspicious. So Dee Dee cut off contact and found a new neurologist. That was one missed attempt to stop the madness. We also learned that an anonymous phone call had been made to local law enforcement stating that Dee Dee had been using aliases and faking her daughter's various ailments. Another missed opportunity for law enforcement. They did go to the family home, but Dee Dee convinced officers that the call must have come from someone connected to her crazy ex-husband. I do want to go into a bit more about the fact that Gypsy Rose knew that she could walk, and she'd be punished physically, verbally, and emotionally when her mother would catch her not using her wheelchair or walker. And once the truth was brought to light, many wondered why the girl didn't literally stand up to her mother. All she would have to do is stand up in public and speak her truth, but she didn't think anyone would believe her. She said, quote, "I couldn't just jump out of the wheelchair because I was afraid and I didn't know what my mother would do. I didn't have anyone to trust." But eventually, that fear began to wane, and Gypsy sought to literally stand up for herself and stand up to her mother. At first, it came in small steps, like walking to the kitchen after her mother was asleep and indulging in all the sugary foods she could find, further proving to herself that she was not, in fact, allergic to sugar, and further ruining the teeth she had left as her non-existent saliva glands couldn't help clear her mouth of the excess sugar. With that revelation, Gypsy wondered what else her mother could be keeping from her, and she managed to break into her mother's safe when she was a teenager. She found paperwork that proved her real age, stating that she was born in 1991. This terrified Gypsy, and she did what she once couldn't possibly fathom doing. She ran away to a friend's house, documents in hand. It was a 4-hour taste of freedom before her mother found her and warned her to never do it again. But that taste of freedom was so sweet. Gypsy made another attempt to leave the house in February of 2011 to meet a 35-year-old man she'd met online. She was only 19 at the time, though her mother was still passing her off as 15 years old. Dee Dee allegedly found him in a hotel room and presented paperwork stating that Gypsy was a minor. Gypsy would later tell a court what happened next. Quote, "She dragged me back home and smashed my laptop with a hammer, screaming, 'If you contact anyone else ever again, I'm going to take the hammer to your fingers next time.' Then my mom put me in handcuffs and tied me to a bed with a dog leash. She put a bell on the door so she'd hear me if I tried to escape. I was tied for 2 weeks," end quote. But this didn't stop Gypsy's desire to break free and make her life her own. Perhaps it even empowered her. She set up a private Facebook account using the alias Emma Rose to send messages to her best friend, Alea, asking for tips on how to flirt and kiss. In 2012, when she was 21, she acted on her desire to develop a romantic relationship and signed up for a free Christian dating site, something that would change the course of her life forever. It was on this website that she met Nicholas Godejohn, a man from Wisconsin, and she trusted him with all of the sordid details of her past, all of the ways that her mother deceived her. In return, Nick confided in her as well, explaining that he believed that she had dissociative identity disorder and that he was actually a 500-year-old vampire called Victor. And he also told her he enjoyed BDSM. It was later discovered that he had been diagnosed with autism at an early age and had an IQ of 82 with the functional ability of a 10-year-old. But the budding romance seemed innocent enough at first, with several messages between the two being released in the aftermath of their actions. Quote, "I need to tell you something. I'm no model. I have a medical condition, so I can't walk. I have a chair I use. Is that an issue?" Gypsy wrote in one message. Nick responds, "Why would that be a problem? You are an angel in my eyes. It will never make any difference in how I see you from the inside out." The relationship continued for 3 years under Dee Dee's nose. Gypsy sent messages to Alea about him. She was talking about this new guy that she was now in love with and that they had met on this Christian dating site, and they were already planning on naming their children after him. This is what she told to ABC News. And Alea was alarmed because she believed Gypsy was still a minor, and she tried to talk her out of it, which was unsuccessful.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Despite Alea's warnings, the couple concocted several ways to be together, one in which involved meeting at a movie theater. Another was Gypsy conceiving Nick's child. And the last, murdering Dee Dee. That's how they could be together. And they did meet at a movie theater in March of 2015, when Gypsy and Dee Dee were set to see the live-action version of Cinderella. Gypsy had quite the Disney fairy tale obsession, which I absolutely get, given her upbringing. It was a way for her to escape. And Nick even went so far as to dress the part. He showed up as Prince Charming in the hopes to win over Dee Dee, which didn't happen. Gypsy, of course, dressed up as Cinderella. Here is Gypsy in an interview with Amy Robach describing how the meeting went between Nick and her mother.
Awful. Oh my God. She got jealous because I was spending a little too much attention on him, and she had ordered me to stay away from him. And needless to say, that was a very long argument that lasted a couple weeks.
An argument that lasted a couple of weeks, what does that look like?
Yelling, throwing things, calling me names, bitch, slut, whore,
Did you hate your mother at that point?
I didn't hate her.
You wanted her dead.
Yes, but it was not because I hated her. It was because I wanted to escape her.
Dee Dee's lack of support didn't stop the lovebirds, though. They slipped into the bathroom of the theater to try to conceive that child, Gypsy losing her virginity in the process. She went on to tell Amy Roback in the ABC interview that Dee Dee would yell at Gypsy and throw things at her, calling her a bitch, a slut, and a whore over this relationship. But in spite of this, Gypsy began to second-guess their murder plot. She focused instead on trying to conceive that child. But she and Nick lived so far away from one another, and their meetings were infrequent, with no successful conception in sight. So I guess the next logical step was murder. It was the only thing left on the list. Gypsy justified the plan to kill her mother, quote, not because I hated her. It was because I wanted to escape her. And it wasn't Nick that persuaded Gypsy to commit the crime, though. It was his alter ego, Victor. The couple did not agree on the method of ending Dee Dee's life. Nick wanted to use a machete, but Gypsy insisted on planning the murder herself. It was her mother, after all. Later, at Nick's trial, Gypsy explained that, quote, a tasteless and odorless poison was too hard to find, that arson would be too complicated, and a gun would be too messy. Instead of a machete, Gypsy stole a hunting knife from Walmart. She mailed Nick more than $1,000 that she stole from Dee Dee. He was to purchase a round-trip bus ticket for himself and a one-way for Gypsy to join him back in Wisconsin. The rest of the money was for food and a room at a nearby Days Inn hotel. And on June 10th, 2015, a text message from Gypsy to Nick stated, quote, this shit is gonna go down tonight. Just the gloves and knife? Nick responded, duct tape too, to muffle her? Gypsy said she would pre-cut the tape. The pair convened at the Blanchard home. Here's Gypsy's recollection of her feelings prior to the murder in an ABC interview, along with Nick's confession.
How are you feeling?
Honestly, terrified. But then I had taken some medication that was not prescribed to me to calm me down.
Gypsy says she hands the items to Nick and hides in the bathroom while he goes into the bedroom, matching Nick's story to police.
Okay, I'll admit it. I did actually stab her mom. I will admit it.
So when you're stabbing Dee, where is she at?
She's on her stomach.
Did she scream or holler?
Yeah, she did.
What was she saying?
First she said help.
And then what did she say?
And then she called up for Gypsy, but Gypsy didn't do anything.
Gypsy claimed later in an interview to 2020 that she really didn't think that Nick would go through with it, but he did. And despite her best efforts to muffle the noise, she did hear her mother's cries. Dee Dee screamed for Gypsy multiple times. Quote, she was screaming out for me by name, but I never did anything. I didn't want to move. At that point, I wanted to go get help for her so bad, but I was so afraid to get up. And then everything just went quiet. Dee Dee was stabbed a total of 17 times. Her neck was slashed down to the bone. Once she was dead, Gypsy and Nick had sex in Gypsy's room. Gypsy later alleged that Nick raped her and tried to have sex with her mother's corpse before leaving the house the following morning. She said in the documentary, Mommy Dead and Dearest, that, quote, I made a deal with him. I'd let him rape me, and then he wouldn't do that to my mom. Graphic messages were then posted from her mother's Facebook page, prompting confusion and a police response leading to the discovery of Dee Dee's body. Quote, that bitch is dead. That was the first post on June 14th, 2015, leading her followers to think the account had been hacked. A secondary status update in all capital letters said, I fucking slashed that fat pig and raped her sweet innocent daughter. Her scream was so fucking
loud, LOL. That was hard to say. It was later revealed that Gypsy urged Nick to post the updates so her mother's body would be found. Neighbors and the greater Springfield area feared the worst for Gypsy upon discovering of the corpse. After all, they'd only known her as sickly, wheelchair-bound. And if Dee Dee suffered a horrific end, what did that mean for her beloved daughter? They were so worried about the sick girl. Gypsy's stepmother, Christy, told BuzzFeed that, quote, "I was in hysterics thinking she got brought somewhere and was left to die." She also wondered how in the world she would be able to take care of her stepdaughter with all of her ailments and necessary medical care. But Gypsy was safe. She and Nick were on a road trip to freedom. Gypsy allegedly disguising herself in a Cher-type wig. Here's a piece from ABC News that describes the speculation around the murder because it was just so hard for those who knew Gypsy to fathom her involvement.
People were saying, well, maybe she was tricked into doing this. She met somebody online, he wanted to take her away, and the mother wouldn't let her. They fought, somehow the mother was killed. It was still the prevailing thought that she was really innocent.
The princess outfit's now replaced with an orange jumpsuit.
My vision was still of this fragile little girl, and that was shattered.
It was hard to wrap your brain around how can this young, sick girl who can't walk be involved in her mother's death. So it was shocking beyond shocking.
Gypsy and Nick had sealed the murder weapon and the thousands of dollars they stole from Dee Dee and mailed them to Nick's house in Wisconsin. Police then tracked down Gypsy and Nick at his parents' home days later. Beside a lewd conduct arrest in 2013, masturbating in a McDonald's, Nick had no criminal history or even a record of violent behavior. And after a short standoff with the SWAT team, the couple was taken into custody. In her first police interrogation, Gypsy faked despair and denied knowing anything about her mother's death. And in a phone call with her father, she maintained her innocence. Here's a clip of that phone call.
Father from jail.
Daddy, I understand that we haven't had a chance to get close in a long time, probably my whole life.
I have a lot of questions, obviously. You know, I'm confused.
The stuff they say in the news is horrible and not true. You know that I love my mama, and you know that I would never hurt her. Just know that I'm innocent and know that I'm still your little girl.
But something seemed off. Her own father and friends and neighbors were shocked to see the images of this frail, wheelchair-bound girl walking on the news. Finally coming to the realization that this sick girl they'd known for years was never actually sick. Investigators who searched the Blanchard home were flabbergasted with the amount of evidence suggesting the long financial fraud scheme that was uncovered, not to mention an entire closet full of medications from top to bottom. Gypsy's friend, Alea, was shocked by the news, giving this interview to WISN 12 News shortly after learning the truth.
Alea Woodmansey grew up with Gypsy Rose Blanchard. She's dumbstruck by this week's revelations that the sickly girl she thought was wheelchair-bound is now accused of orchestrating her mother's murder.
I thought I knew these people so well, and come to find out, I have no idea who they are. They are walking, and it's kind of painful because I really thought I was really close to them.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
The partners in crime were extradited back to Missouri on charges of murder and felony armed criminal action, and were held on a $1 million bond. Before his trial, Nick told ABC News that Gypsy was basically the mastermind behind it all. He said, quote, "I was basically a hired hitman in its own weird sense. The reason why I did do this was because for some reason I was so deeply in love with Gypsy at the time. I do still love her." But his unwavering love didn't distract the jury from his crimes. Nick was found guilty after a mere four-day trial in November of 2018 and sentenced in February of 2019. Convicted of first-degree murder and armed criminal action. The death penalty wasn't sought, and Nick received a mandatory life sentence without parole. He petitioned the court for a new trial in 2022. The motion was denied in 2023. Gypsy pleaded guilty in 2016 to second-degree murder and, as part of a plea deal, was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Within the last couple of weeks, she has been slated for an early release on December 28, 2023, after encouraging fans to write letters asking for her release, 3 years earlier than her sentence required. The 32-year-old won't be leaving prison without someone to go home to, as she is now married to a pen pal named Ryan Scott Anderson, who began writing her after watching the HBO documentary Mommy Dead and Dearest. Regarding the eventual murder of her mother, Dr. Mark Feldman, an expert in Munchausen syndrome by proxy, told Biography.com that, quote, "the control was total, in the same sense that of the control of a kidnapped victim is total. Her daughter was, in essence, a hostage. And I think we can understand that the crime that occurred subsequently in terms of a hostage trying to escape. In some ways, sadly, Gypsy didn't escape at all since. She has spent the last 7 years behind bars. But it doesn't seem like she viewed the time in prison in such a terrible light compared to the hell she lived for years prior." She said in a 2020 interview, "In some ways, they're the same. But now, I'm so much freer. I couldn't walk, I couldn't eat, I couldn't have friends. I feel like I'm freer in prison than living with my mom. I can live like a normal woman." What a life she must have had to make that statement. I honestly can't fathom it. It's all so terrible. And the guilt her father and stepmother conveyed in a 2018 interview with Dr. Phil is palpable. Here's a clip, and we'll end on this note.
It's hard to judge her. I'm never going to question or ask her why. Why you didn't do this or why you did this that way. I feel guilt. How can I let this happen? You know, why I wasn't there for Gypsy Moore? If I could have built that relationship with her, she wouldn't have hesitated to call me and say that, you know, this ain't right.
I told her, I don't judge you for what you did, but I understand why you did it. No matter what, I'm always here for you and I love you.
Not even God can change what has happened. The future hasn't happened yet. The past is over. The only time is now and what you do in this moment. And what you've got to do is not make excuses for what you've done, but own that it's 100% wrong and equip yourself with more powerful, more empowering coping skills so you don't get in this situation again. And if you can use your life, if you do become an advocate, if you do have opportunity to speak, you do have a compelling story, but you're not anywhere near equipped to tell it at this point because you've got to find every lesson from that story that you have right now, because what you have right now is a compelling story, but there's not a takeaway from it yet. I do want to help you have a chance to redeem yourself in this life.
Thank you.
And I will lead you to some resources that will help you do that.
Thank you.
And I will do that, and I will say it in the same breath that I say, I absolutely condemn what you did.
Guys, that was an extremely rough case to cover. I'm glad that Kate was the one that wrote this, because I had such a hard time even reading it. It is just so difficult to wrap your mind around. I'd known about this case for a long time, and it always, I mean, truly scared the shit out of me. So, yeah.
Yeah. Munchausen by proxy as a disorder or mental disease is just really hard to process and to choke down. Rachel and I, as we were recording this, just like had to stop a couple of times. And for me, thinking, we don't have children, but we have our dog, Blue, who we love and adore so much. And I just can't understand, even looking, you know, comparing relationship of a parent to a child to me and Rachel and our dog. I can't imagine bringing him the slightest amount of pain or agony.
No, he's protected. That's all I do is protect him all day long.
We're so concerned about him. I mean, if he's like out of eyesight for 10 minutes, we like shut down everything.
Well, because he's blind. So.
And send out a search party.
Yeah.
But
And he loves to like fall into cactus and get followed by daytime bears.
He needs some attention. Mm-hmm. He's a little guy.
Do you want to tell the daytime bear story real quick?
Well,
just for my listeners.
We live, out in the wilderness, and right now, bears are packing on the meat. You know, they're loading up for the winter before they go into their big hibernation, and right now they are apparently awake for 20 hours a day searching for food, and that has brought at least one big, fuzzy, furry friend to our ranch. He's a giant black bear, and he has been letting us know that he's around, not only with his giant piles of scat, but we saw him in the middle of the day.
Middle of the day. Blue and I are walking up to go see Greg at the home we're building. So we're on a little hike walking up, and Greg calls me, and he's like, "Hey, Rachel, I don't want you to freak out. Act natural. Be cool. But there's a bear right near you."
Let's give him perspective here. So I am working on building our big Hunter's Ranch Lodge venue space. It's a couple shipping containers stacked on top of each other, and I'm on the roof, so I've got a really good view of the whole ranch. And I was dumbfounded when I crawled up there on the ladder that I'm like, what's that? Is that a big, that's a black bear out on our ceremony site where we got married. And I didn't have my phone on me because I wanted to take a picture and, shoot some video of it. And so I watched it for like 5 minutes, and it's like rolling on its back, just batting at, I assume, flies or something in the wind. And then, of course, to my absolute dismay, my worst nightmare, Rachel's just gallivanting, just jolly as can be with our blind dog, right up our main hiking path to the ceremony site. So I had to run down the ladder, grab my phone, and call Rachel like, "Hey, you got to change directions. You're headed directly to a bear."
Yep. And he said, "Act natural." And I did a light run. You're not supposed to run from black bears. I Googled that afterwards, but I was really worried about Blue, my little baby boy. And so I was quickly ushering him into one of the containers because I was like, all right, Blue's going to try to herd the bear. This is not going to be good.
He's probably trying to befriend him. We have a very friendly dog. He doesn't understand personal space because he's blind and he thinks everyone is his friend. So he'll pretty much just shove his snout right into you to make friends. And there's just definitely some animals who don't prefer that way of greeting.
You don't think that the bear... Oh, well, but maybe it did because Blue was also missing for 6 months in the wilderness before he was
maybe they're old pals.
Yeah, maybe they're friends. Maybe he hibernated with them. Who knows? But we don't know. It's not us. It's not on us to judge. We don't
Rachel
know.
Rachel and Blue narrowly avoided the bear encounter.
And then Kristen and I went on a four-wheeler to go try to find the bear because we thought that was a good idea.
Because adventure, right?
Yeah, it's adventure. It's adventure time. But you know what? On this bear track, guess what our next episode's going to be? A very insane, scary story about a grizzly bear attack. That is our next episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And until next time, fuck it, daytime bear.
Wonderful segue. I wasn't sure how you were going to connect bear encounters with Munchausen by proxy, but I forgot the next episode. This is going to be a good one. I am very excited for Rachel to interview this man. He has a harrowing experience.
And he's so polite. He's so Canadian and polite. All right, guys. Until next time. Love you. Bye.